House Judiciary is called to order. Present for the record, Representatives Cott, Coghill, Wilson, myself, McGuire, we do have a quorum to conduct business. It's the 4th of May, and it is 1:05 p.m. We have three items on the agenda today. They should none of them should take too much time. House Bill 316 is the extension of the Board of Governors Bar Association. Representative Stoltz's staff is here. I've spoken with Representative Stoltz. What we've decided to do is extend it 1 year, and that is so that Representative Stoltz and Samuels and I, along with the drafters, can work on some of the recommendations that came out of LBNA. I just ran out of time, frankly, at this time of the year, tried to incorporate some of them, get feedback from the bar. We had a good dialogue going back and forth, and we just ran out of time. So to force me to do the work and us to do the work, we've extended it just 1 year, but we want to ship this thing out so that we don't let them wind down. So with that, I'd appreciate a motion to adopt the CS.
I so move.
Okay, so we have version I before us. Any discussion? And a motion to move it out. Representative Cott?
Madam Chair, I move that we move out committee CS for House Bill 316 with individual recommendations and company and fiscal note.
Okay, any objection to moving it out? Hearing none, 316's on its way.
Thank you
very much. Okay, next. Lauren, which do you want us to take up first? The easy one? Okay, how about Senate Bill 134 first?
Okay.
Tell us.
For the record, my name is Lauren Rice. I'm staff to Senator Bundy. And this bill came about because Senator Bundy had a constituent who called who could not get her phone calls returned from a police department after being the victim of a sexual assault. And there currently really is no other avenue to, it's difficult at this point if you're not getting what you need from a police department or the troopers, it's difficult to know where else to go. And so this bill provides another place to go. It expands the responsibilities and investigation rights of Office of Victims Rights to look into the investigation portion of a sexual assault or sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree case and serve as an advocate for the victim through the investigation phase, not just through the actual court proceedings. I could go on, but I think that pretty much sums it up. It has the support of Department of Law, Department of Public Safety, and the Office of Victims' Rights. Senator Bundy worked closely with all the departments to draft it, and they are all pleased with the outcome.
Great. Okay, I've got one person to testify. First of all, questions for Mrs. Rice. Okay, then we've got one person, Marianne Henry from the Office of Victims' Rights. Ms. Henry, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Did you want to make any testimony on Senate Bill 134?
Yes, I would like to comment briefly. The bill has changed now. It's a good bill. Originally, the thought had been that the Police Standards Council would look into this. I think the Office of Victims' Rights is in a better position to look into it and do a study on it, take the information from the victims, and also investigate the police agencies. And then the intent was for me to do a report in 2008 to see where there were problems and how they can be resolved. Hopefully there aren't going to be a lot of major problems, but we'll certainly find out if this bill is passed. And I am happy to do the pilot project and do the study and report. I think the decision was made it would be a five-year study going back to 2003 when Office of Victims' Rights was established, and so that makes sense. I'll be able to go back and then also go forward, obviously. That's all I have.
Where are the bill files?
Okay, questions for Ms. Henry regarding Representatives Guerra, Gruenberg, and Anderson have joined us. We are on Senate Bill 134. We just passed out prior to that the extension of the Board of Governors of the Bar Association House Bill 316, there was no discussion. We passed that out. Now we're on Senate Bill 134. Mrs. Rice
is that the one-year extension?
Yes. And Mrs. Rice has offered her testimony on it, which is summarized in this sponsor statement. Marianne Henry just testified in support of the bill. And there's no one else, anyone else in the audience that I've overlooked that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 134? Anybody online? Okay, so hearing none, we're going to close public testimony, bringing the bill back before us. Representative Gruenberg.
I have a question. How will victims learn of this option?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg. Currently, the various shelters and, for instance, in Anchorage, there's AWARE and there's STAR, or there's AWAKE in Anchorage and AWARE in Juneau, and they hand out pamphlets explaining what OVR currently does and their services, and the peace officers and troopers are also supposed to do that. And we don't have a hard and fast mechanism for spreading information about OVR. We just hope that the individuals that are responsible for dealing with victims let them know what services are available for them.
Through the chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
There's no requirement in here that OVR undertake any action to notify anybody about this. Do we have somebody from OVR on the line?
Yes, Marianne Henry.
Ms. Henry, this is Representative Gruenberg. Maybe let me repeat my question. How are victims, potential victims, going to learn about your new ability to help them?
So that was my initial concern when I testified earlier that perhaps we should just automatically get all reports on sexual assault, but that was voted down. So now what I'm trying to do is simply advertise, do an advertising campaign as much as I can. We had a Compass piece. I'm doing another one in the bar rag. We were at the bar convention giving out literature to attorneys who might have a client that they think maybe needs our help. The police are required to give them a pamphlet, as well as the prosecutors, court date. Additionally, we are going to
I'm sorry. You're breaking up. Maybe we can ask. There's nothing we can do. Could you repeat what you've just said? We have a very bad connection here.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm on a cell, too. I didn't expect the testimony to be at one. Anyway, we are, you know, doing an advertising campaign through the newspapers and through private attorneys, and we are also teaching at all of the training sessions for the police academies. We are now going to the first responders, such as paramedics and nurses' aides, particularly in the villages, and letting them know of this of the office and having them advise the victims of the opportunity to report to our office. And so hopefully by spreading the word to all of these people that would come in contact with the victim, including you know, STAR and those organizations and the first people that appear, we're hoping to get the word out.
Okay, any other questions for the bill sponsor or for Ms. Henry? Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, Ms. Henry, you said that at one time you had advocated that you be provided with reports of these crimes, but that was rejected by somebody, that suggestion. Do you wish this committee to consider such a suggestion?
Yes, you can certainly consider it. The Department of Law was against my proposal, can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. My thought initially was that we will not have a very good statistical base if we simply wait for victims to come to us, because under the statute, we cannot go out to victims. They have to come to us. And in fact, the instance that Senator Bundy used to pass this law, that victim did not come to us. And so we never would have heard of her. And my suggestion was to require all police agencies to fax us the front sheet. They don't have to do the whole report, just the front sheet that shows there's been a rape reported, the name of the defendant, and the name of the victim. Law opposed it, saying that the privacy rights of the victim that they are concerned with. On the other hand, you know, we of course understand confidentiality as well. The report, of course, wouldn't name names; it would just use numbers.
That's an interesting proposition, Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. That sounds to me like an excellent suggestion, and I'd be prepared to make such a conceptual amendment if we know exactly how Ms. Henry would like it to be phrased. But before I do that, go to that effort, I'd ask Mrs. Rice, if through the chair, what the sponsor would think of such an amendment.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I can't answer that. I don't know at this time. I think that my best bet is just to go with the will of the committee. But I do think that there are valid points on both sides. There needs to be some consideration for privacy when it comes to victims and who they want to know about their case. And at the same time, I agree with Ms. Henry that it will be very hard to determine how many cases are being reported versus how many cases are being investigated, particularly in rural areas, unless you take some kind of accountability action somewhere where there's an ability to cross-reference what's being done versus what's being reported.
Madam Chair, we have the Department of Law here. Could we ask their views?
Yes, and Representative Wilson first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure how this works, so maybe somebody can walk it through me. The way the bill is written, the victim cannot contact them. Why? I want to know why the victim can't contact them, and if it would be such a bad deal if every police department or a law officer could give them the numbers of the victims' rights people, and then
I think she said that they couldn't contact the victim.
Yeah, no, what she said that the victim couldn't contact them. I thought she said
no, opposite. Oh. So right now, what this would do is allow the victim to cut. Right now, the victim cannot contact. In this way and have their rights investigated by the Office of Victims' Rights. The bill would change it to say that they...
No.
Yeah, but that being said, what the concern is that Ms. Henry brought up is, what if every report of a sexual assault, the front cover page could be faxed to them, and they would then have the ability to contact the victim. So that's what's in question. And the Department of Law, I believe, position is that may be violating their right to privacy. So she's saying we would be better off if we could contact the victim themselves.
But why can't the victim be handed a piece of paper with their telephone numbers on it and let the victim contact them?
My staff has just suggested, Madam Chair. What if OVR has a form and the police are required to give it to the victim with OVR's phone number?
Yeah. I think they are. They currently.
See, that's what you said. They already do that.
Yeah. This is Mary Ann Henry. Yes, the officers are required to give them that form. The problem is that at the time the officers are giving a sexual assault victim that form, they're not thinking about that kind of thing. I mean, they are emotionally and physically injured, and so they don't understand everything that's going on. And so I'm assuming those forms just kind of go by the wayside.
You know, I guess my concern would be that I think it goes a little deeper. Particularly, I can envision a circumstance in rural Alaska. And I don't know if this is another concern you have or not. You can dispute it if it isn't. But you might want to have information about those individuals that aren't willing to come to you. You might want to go to them because you believe that they're embarrassed or scared or so on, particularly in rural Alaska where we know this can occur. My concern about that is that that's really putting the state in a place of intervening in people's private lives, and I'm concerned about that.
Chair McGuire, I think that if there was a fax that went out to OVR just alerting them that a sexual assault or sexual abuse of a minor had occurred, but we did not allow OVR to actually contact the victim unless they initiated that contact first, it would be a way to gather the information without having OVR overstep their bounds, particularly if the individual who committed the assault lives in the same home as the victim. You can see why it would not be a good situation for OVR to be calling about a reported rape.
That's my concern.
But we could, OVR simply wouldn't be allowed to contact the victim unless they initiated contact.
Submitting the form then, if that's the goal, to gather statistical information that's accurate, what about submitting the form with redacted information so that the name itself is not on it? The nature of the assault, the demographic of where it occurred, and the nature of assault would be there so that OVR could gather that, but that the name itself would be redacted. That way we wouldn't run into any privacy issues. What do you think of that?
That's much more attractive to me than having... I really think we shouldn't be giving these names to anybody unless they... I mean, I think the most you should do is give them the form. If you want to give them some cover sheet with names redacted, I guess I wouldn't feel too nervous about that, but it's the victim's rights to make that call and to make that decision.
And Ms. Henry, too, I want to be real careful that you understand that I recognize the issue, and I truly wish that all victims of assault, sexual abuse, would come forward and truly, I do, and truly go through and get all of the rights afforded them. But for the reasons that they don't, I don't feel it's my place to interfere. And that's my concern, is that those are very private, often even sometimes family-related incest issues, and I would just feel very nervous. And I also want to put on the record that I have no lack of confidence in your office's ability to keep privacy of the utmost importance. I believe what you're saying, but it's just too dangerous of an area for me to go.
This is Mary Ann Henry. I understand the concern, and our intent had not been to call the victim, because what we're doing is looking at the investigation and seeing how long it takes, why it's taking so long, what the hang-ups are, and so our contacts would all be with the police agencies. So they could redact the name, that would be fine with us, or they could simply just send us everything, and we would just, you know, we have a requirement of confidentiality as well. We would just never use the name or call them unless they called us first. So either way, it would be fine. I don't know how the police agencies feel, because I know they're probably not going to be real thrilled about faxing us every, sexual assault report anyway, but... to have them redact the victim's name is fine, or just relying on our confidentiality requirements is fine.
Okay, thank you so much. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We talked a minute ago about the fact that the police investigators give the victim a sheet with the telephone number of OVR, but that a lot of times people are very traumatized, and that's the last thing on their mind at that moment in time. And my staff has made a suggestion, which I think has a lot of merit. There is usually follow-up with the police talking to the victim later. And what would the possibility be, and I'm kind of asking this to Ms. Carpinetti, when they have a follow-up victim interview with the police, just giving them the sheet a second time to make certain that it hasn't gotten lost or misplaced, or that they haven't had an awareness, I mean, in a very unobtrusive manner, if the situation presented itself. If I could ask Ms. Carpinetti that.
Yes,
wouldn't have any objection to it. That would be something that the police would have to think about. And OVR, I think, is the one that supplies the forms to begin with. So it's
may
really
I ask,
there.
May I ask Ms. Henry that question? Ms. Henry, how about if we were to put something in here that would be fairly loose language that would encourage the police or the law enforcement investigator at the initial interview and at any later appropriate time to pass such a sheet on to the victim if the opportunity presented itself? I'd ask you how you would feel about that, and then the bill sponsor the same question.
That would be fine with me. I would ask Ms. Carpinetti, isn't it true that the officers are required to give this information?
Yes, it's true. I think the law requires them to at a particular time. That certainly wouldn't forbid them to give them at another time, I don't think.
Yeah, well, what I was thinking is Mr. Grunberg's suggestion that we suggest they give it to them, you could simply make that a requirement.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Grunberg.
What I am thinking is that I would like to offer such an amendment that would be agreeable to everyone if the bill sponsor is agreeable to that, too. And I would ask Ms. Henry, if you would suggest very conceptual language, and then, Madam Chair, if we could ask if the committee would approve, without objection, the concept, I would ask Ms. Henry, Ms. Carpinetti, and Ms. Rice, to come up with the exact language with the staff to put it into the bill. Would that be acceptable?
Yeah, I want to ask Mrs. Rice what of all of the ideas that have been proposed, the facts redaction, second offering of information, what idea do you like?
And are you thinking a 2 to 3 day subcommittee with 10 to 20 hours of analysis? On
only if Grayson McGuire Anderson is the member.
Yeah. We don't have the police
here
to say.
Like,
of course,
hey,
I'm sleeping now. It's not
Lauren's
nighttime.
Like, can we get back to the bill, please?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think that your idea has merit, and I certainly don't see anything wrong with it. But the thrust of the bill is that we have the highest rate of sexual assault and sexual abuse in the nation, and we simultaneously have the lowest rate of arrest in the nation. We are number one, and then we are number 50. And my concern is that while requiring information about OVR to be handed out at the first or the second interaction with a peace officer or with the troopers is valid and important, what if there is no follow-up? What if the problem is that you can't get your phone call returned? And, I mean, and there is no second or third meeting with the peace officers or the troopers. And so I think that that idea has merit, and I just think that it should go along with the facts, the blank facts is perhaps no names or no contact information, but a blank fax to Department of Law or to OVR saying this rape occurred, this is the time it was reported, and the two should not cancel each other out.
Yeah.
Because I think that it's important for OVR, if we are going to make this a pilot program, for OVR to have the opportunity to gather real data.
Yeah. And I don't disagree. If we're going to do something about the problem, we've got to know, you know, how many of these are being reported, how many arrests are really occurring, why is there this disparity?
I would just say add to, and although I think it's a good idea, and I think maybe police departments do this now, follow up with information, requiring them to do so in statute is probably not necessary because, as Ms. Rice says, it probably doesn't apply in all cases. And the police are working pretty hard anyway. They're not going to miss a chance to inform victims, I think.
Okay, so Representative Grunberg, let's get moving here. Would you be prepared to offer a conceptual amendment regarding the facts redaction concept?
Yes, Ms. Henry?
Yes.
What would you like to say?
I would like to say that all law enforcement in the state must fax the following information to OVR. First, the report of a sexual assault in the first degree or a sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree, the date of the offense, the police report number.
Just a second. Go ahead.
And the officer assigned.
You want badge number two?
No.
Okay. That is my motion. Let me repeat that conceptually, just so we get it on the table, and then people can shoot it down or whatever they want. This would be a requirement, and this is in the uncodified law. Do we want this in the uncodified law, or do we want this in codified statute, Ms. Henry? Or Ms. Carpinetti?
I would say uncodified. This is a pilot program.
Okay. This will be an uncodified law that... that added to the bill, that all law enforcement personnel, the investigating, all the law enforcement personnel must fax the following information to OVR. Number one, report of these of crime, each sexual abuse one or sexual abuse of a minor one, the date, the police report number, and the officer assigned.
I'll object.
Okay. Speaking to your objection.
I just think that it becomes cumbersome and we don't have law enforcement here. I would ask the chair or Lauren from Senator Bundy's office, has law enforcement, you know, statewide, city, at any level, weighed in on this?
Through the chair, Representative Anderson, Department of Public Safety worked closely with Department of Law originally drafting it. And in its current form, to the best of my knowledge, they're in support of it.
Absolutely, amendment.
Yes, and that also goes for APD.
But where does this bill go next? Doesn't it go to finance next?
Yes.
Yeah. So the worst case scenario would be that we could put it in, and if there were opposition, I can already see we're going to go against each other on another amendment today.
No, okay, what do you wish? Okay, I support it. My objection passes. No. I'll just be in the lounge.
I'm sure I'll
Representative Coghill.
Lerner.
Whoa.
Representative Coghill.
You want me to withdraw the amendment? I don't want to get in the middle of this one.
I'll enter into this discussion. But yeah.
I'll give you my card.
Oh, I remove my objection.
No, Madam Chair, I'll maintain an objection.
Okay.
As I'm trying to think about the process here. We're way before a conviction. We're in an investigation.
Right.
We're looking for kind of a neutral statistician style report is what we're looking for, I think. But because of the smallness of our communities, I think having these types of reports, especially at the first or second investigation, I'm just concerned about it because at this point it's an investigation. And we certainly have victims, so don't get me wrong. This is not to belittle the investigation of a real crime. But I'm concerned then that you have another investigation happening outside of that would be triggered because of this report. And because we're given a more authority to be investigative in their approach. And I don't know what all that means, so I'm nervous about it. You know, I understand helping a victim. I understand that when there's a charge, there's a need for help because usually the person charged gets most of the attention. So I appreciate that. But until there's a conviction, help is one thing, but investigation is another thing. And I'm just nervous about it. I don't understand anything I know about it, and haven't studied it as deeply as some of the folks around the table have, but just shooting off information as soon as it happens, while things are under investigation, I'm not comfortable with. And in reading the bill, I was appreciative of the fact that they had the right to help when they came in the door, because then you got a real person who's got a real name, and we have other studies that we're doing in other arenas on rape in Alaska. As shameful as it is in Alaska, we're trying in every direction we can to collect these things. I just don't know that this is the place or the way, maybe that's a better way of saying it. So I'm concerned, and I would proceed with caution on that.
Any other thoughts? Representative Gruenberg, did you want to?
Well, I would ask, in view of what
I don't really have a strong opinion.
Representative Coghill and Representative Anderson have said, I would ask for a response from Ms. Henry and Ms. Carpenetti and Ms. Rice to those comments. I'd like to hear what they have to say.
Okay.
Ms. Henry?
Ms. Henry, you want to start?
This is Mary Henry. Well, the purpose of the bill was to find out if there are problems in an investigation. And my intent in doing the study, obviously we would be tracking them and, you know, double checking over the months, how's it going, what's happened. And the study results will also say, you know, if a case has been declined for prosecution. So that there isn't, you know, this concern about somebody being convicted before they've been to trial, or charges have been even filed. So I think the purpose more is to see what's happening with the investigations. Do they need more training? Are they just simply dropping the ball, or what? The other thing that I did want to mention is that a lot of times we find, particularly in the villages, if the police drop the investigation for not a good reason, after about 6 months or so, you know, the victim is kind of relieved, and she doesn't want to go forward on it. And so that's another reason that we don't want to, you know, start up something with the victim again after, you know, she's kind of closed it out. But we want to make sure, we want to find out why it was dropped, or why the police dropped the ball.
Annie Carpenetti?
Yes, I would. This is Annie Carpenetti.
You're not required to have thoughts, by the way, about a particular subject.
I think I would hesitate to put this requirement in before consulting with police agencies and knowing what the concerns that they have and the constraints that they have and how this would affect them. So I would not put it in if you were asking for my opinion.
Through the chair, I understand your concerns, Representative Coghill, but I think that if it was very clear that all names, both the alleged perpetrator and the victim, and all contact information were left out of the facts, I do not think this is particularly cumbersome. I do not think that it would be an invasion of anyone's privacy rights if there were no names. And I think that at this point in Alaska, our situation is severe enough that we maybe need to try alternative ways to gain information and get real data about what's going on in our state. And I also just would add that if you are concerned about false accusations, and I understand that concern, that's about 3% of reported rapes right now.
Okay, Representative Cockrell?
I certainly respect that immensely. And having traveled around a little bit, I know that we have that problem. We have that problem in the misdemeanor world as well. In fact, we have kind of an issue in Alaska that is a boiling cauldron where we're not able to get police enforcement or law enforcement or public safety in certain places in Alaska. It's just very difficult to do, even with some of the best trained people we have. But I know that getting misdemeanors is very difficult to do. I know that getting people to come forward in small villages is a very difficult thing to do. And so I'm trying to envision what it looks like when we have one segment, egregious as it is, that gets the special effort and not the others, what the consequence of that is. I'd like to see police response in a whole range of areas, including homicide, in certain areas where it's very difficult sometimes to get investigative work done. And I don't know at this point that I'm willing to just put one above the other by having, as soon as a policeman gets a report that somebody's been victimized, that they start sending out paper to to the potential victims. But I am very sensitive, believe me, I'm very sensitive to the fact of responsiveness. And it may be a manpower issue, it may be a whole range of issues, including a whole town's peer pressure issue. So I think as we go into this, Madam Chair, I'm going to go cautiously. So
I have a solution.
You said your piece, and you want to wrap up with your piece, and then let's take a vote. Representative Gruenberg, and move on.
Yeah, it seems to me not so much what this is as when it is done. That seems to be what we're focusing on here. And Ms. Henry, suppose my amendment were changed a bit to require this to be done a little later in the process. How would you feel about that? Since we're talking about a statistical report anyway.
Well, then that raises the problem of the victim that originally complained, is that she never heard from the police again. And if she never heard from the police again, you know, we're not going to hear from the police.
But in this case, Madam Chair, Ms. Henry through the chair, you're going to know that there's been a report, the date of the report, the report number, which is confidential anyway, and the officer assigned. And suppose, I don't have a particular time in the process. I'm thinking when this should be done, and maybe other members of the committee would have it.
Okay.
I'm just throwing this out. This
okay, so the amendment's on the floor. I truly do not care how this amendment goes down. I truly do not. I respect everyone's opinion on the matter. I hope they vote on their opinions. That being said, I'll state my piece. There was a circumstance that occurred very recently in Nome, Alaska. There was a young woman who was a victim. We now know, according to a jury of his peers in the state of Alaska, the victim of murder. She was from a police officer. What we know from the facts of that case is that this individual had been involved in multiple assaults of women in that community over a large period of time. And so if you are being assaulted by a police officer and the very people that you are supposed to report to are the very people assaulting you, what recourse do you have? And that's just the concern that raises right up in my face. And so if you fail to respond and no one else in the world knows that you filed this complaint and you're relying, because you've been raised that way, to rely on the police to respond to your claim, regardless of who the person is that's assaulted you, and you never get that phone call back, and you don't know to go to OVR because maybe you have an eighth grade reading level, or maybe you're not aware, then where are you supposed to go? And so I just think we need to get our hands around it. And I don't disagree, with all due respect, Representative Coghill and Representative Anderson, that it would be a burden. I believe it's ministerial at best on the part of the police. And I think whatever information that we can begin to gather about why we have these incredibly high rates of sexual abuse against minors and women in this state, why we have these embarrassing statistics, I want to know. And this is a pilot program that has a sunset date, and maybe it won't help us, but if there's a chance that it does, I want it in there. So that's my piece. But if it fails, I'm okay.
John, hand in hand, you want to remove the amendment? Come on, brother.
No, it's
a very compelling matter.
No,
I mean,
you make good points. I've removed my objection.
This is well taken.
So, Madam Secretary,
I'll remove my objection. Madam.
Oh, they're removing, but I want this just clear. This information should be sent to OVR when? I want to put that in the amendment, Ms. Henry. When would you want that to be done?
Within 2 weeks.
Within 2 weeks of the report?
Yes.
Okay. That is an amendment to the amendment.
Okay. So is there an objection to the amendment to the amendment? Okay, hearing none, the amendment's back before us. Is the objection maintained? Okay. Hearing none, amendment number one, as amended, is adopted. Is there further amendments to the pilot program bill? Representative Gruenberg.
Ms. Henry, what was the other issue we were talking, Lauren, what was the other one we were talking about? The follow-up. Yes, okay. So my second amendment, Madam Chair, conceptually is that the police now have to give the piece of paper at the initial contact, and I would say at each subsequent contact, or at least I'll put that. That may be too. Is that too many? I'm looking at Lauren.
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I think either the first and or the second.
Okay, Ms. Henry, what Lauren's saying is the first and the second. How do you feel about that?
That's fine. Uh-huh.
Okay. So the second amendment, Madam Chair, thank you for giving me a little leeway here, is that the piece of paper must be given at the first and the second contact. And I think that may have to be not in the uncodified law, but if that's in the codified law, that amendment should go into the codified law, too. Is that in codified law, too? I'm asking Ms. Yes, it is. Okay, then that would go in the codified law.
And I would ask, Madam Chair, that the photographer take a picture when Representative Gruenberg is speaking so it shows the reality of our committee.
A shocked and horrified expression.
This amendment reminds me of the bill that I think it was Representative Samuel's bill, but that requires police officers to give a booklet to victims of crime upon...
Service.
Yeah, and to say these are the rights and these are the things and so on. So I don't know what part of codified law it would be.
We'll leave that to, if we could ask the staff to come up with that.
Annie, do you have any comments or objection to that?
My only concern is I would like to hear the police response to this. I mean, it seems like they're already required to give them this information on first contact. It shouldn't be that much of a burden to give it to them again. But I don't know what the burdens are that they have. And
let me make this commitment too, that that the police will be contacted between now and finance, and if they have serious concerns, although I think people got the drift that on the first one I don't know how strongly that would influence me, but on the second here, if it is too cumbersome and if it really is this presents this burden, that I'd be willing, and certainly I know Representative Anderson and Representative Coghill and probably Representative Cott and so on would be willing to speak on that removal. In other words, I respect the committee process, so if it's changed down the line because of further information that we don't have today, then I understand. Okay, so that's the amendment. Amendment number two, which would require the victim to be presented with information about how to get in touch with the Office of Victims' Rights, both at the time, the first time that they're interviewed with the police, and then at a later time, the point being that perhaps at a later time, they will have had a little bit more time to collect their thoughts and the information might be more valid. So is there an objection to amendment number two? Okay, hearing none, amendment number two carries. Amendment number three, Representative Guerra.
Madam Chair, what I've heard about the bill has all been good, so I'm supportive. I just want to address one other subject in the report that we get to the legislature. Am I up to amendment number three? Is that?
Yeah.
I move amendment number three just to. I have to do that before I can talk about it.
Hey, there's an objection?
There's a lot that we can do in changing the law. There's a lot we can do in doing things better to start solving some of the problems of the uninvestigated and unprosecuted sexual assaults in the state. But at some point, probably the answer is going to be that if you don't have any law enforcement in most of the places in the state where sexual assault occurs, you're not going to be able to investigate it and prosecute it. I don't know that that's the answer. That's my instinct as to what the answer is, that we have a shortage of law enforcement. And I think it would be very useful as part of this report to get any information that would be useful to us if the Office of Victims' Rights determines that one of the bottlenecks we have is law enforcement shortages. So the amendment would just say that the recommendations that come to the legislature may include, if pertinent, recommendations about additional law enforcement personnel in rural and urban areas. The Office of Victims' Rights might determine that we don't need to spend any money on law enforcement anywhere, and that we can do this all by doing our job better. And if that's the case, great. But I will stand here and say I'm quite suspicious that I'm quite convinced the answer is going to be that we have a law enforcement shortage. And this is not your fault. I have a frustration in this legislature that we pass laws all the time and say this is going to do things so that we won't have any crime anymore. And until you hire police officers and until you have enough law enforcement, I don't think you're ever going to make real progress in the area of crime deterrence. So anyway, there's the speech. Simple amendment. I would like that addressed in the report, if that's okay.
The Chair, Representative Guerra, I think that newsletters are coming up. I think that Senator Bundy would have quite a few responses to that. But I
give one like this.
Do you need some for your newsletter too?
I don't know if it's necessarily appropriate for me to go too much into detail about some of the changes that he thinks that should occur in some unorganized areas in terms of local government. But that being said, I would just leave it to the will of the committee. I would say that the Department of Public Safety has worked hard to recruit new troopers this year. Last time I checked, they had 9 unfulfilled positions. They have the funding, and there is a shortage of people applying to be in law enforcement. And so I would just offer that it's certainly not an issue of them not trying to fill positions.
Representative
Krakow? Chair, I think the reporting recommendation is a good one. It's just not a good one for this group to do. I think their frustration has already been made known that the access, the communication link is probably the important part. And I'm just not willing to put on them the judgment call on recommendations for policing. I think we can bring them before the committee and ask them that question, I'm sure. But they're probably one of probably 4 or 5 different agencies that would, including community and regional affairs issues, the Police Standards Council, local governance issues. It goes into a whole range of issues. I'm equally frustrated, by the way, on what we are able to do. The needs are greater than we can actually perform. We all know that. It's just how do we get to the resources to where the greatest need is. And so I'm going to speak against the amendment.
Representative Guerra, and then Gruenberg.
Yeah. We're not requiring that they come up with a solution on the issue of the lack of law enforcement. We're requiring that if they believe it's pertinent to their recommendations, that they give us that information. So I don't think we're going to impose any additional burden on them. I think especially Ms. Henry has a lot of experience in this area. I think if the answer is that that we have a shortage in Anchorage and we should do have more VPSOs in rural areas, it's not going to take a lot of work at the Office of Victims' Rights Office to make that recommendation to us. But it just directs them that if they believe that this is pertinent to their report, the issue of how much law enforcement we might need in addition to what we have, that they make a recommendation. And frankly, that would help, if they do, that would help those of us in this legislature who believe that that we are lacking in this area make the case next year for it. So,
Madam Chair.
Representative Coghill?
In response to that, I think on that part of it, the sub-B of this is probably going to be a part of that. And so But I think this includes a bigger judgment call than that, so I'm still going to speak against that.
Okay, further discussion, Representative Gruenberg.
Yeah, well, Representative Guerra really said what I was going to say. It's just as if pertinent, and it simply allows them to do it, and it's a chicken soup kind of an amendment. If they don't want to say anything or they don't feel that they have anything to add. Ms. Henry's a very experienced district attorney, and she brings a lot of experience with her to her job, and she's certainly capable of knowing what she can do and what she doesn't feel comfortable. So I would hope that the objection be removed. It's it may do some be helpful in the end. It's not going to do any harm.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cockhill.
The limited scope is to receive information on complaints of sexual abuse. And that is a narrow scope of whether or not we have a personnel shortage. You know, from their perspective, I suppose it would be okay. And I guess if nobody else is going to object, I don't. It's just if this becomes the report on law enforcement personnel shortages, I'm going to object to that. That's all. I think it's way beyond the scope. But within the text of the law here, reporting on timely and completely investigated victims is really the thing that they're going to report on. And I think this just goes, we're asking them to make other judgment calls other than just the timely and completeness of reporting.
I don't think it'll be a big deal.
So just, you know.
Well, yeah, but I think Representative Coghill is making a good point. On what I'm looking at is the same thing on page 1, sub B. So what he's referring to is it says, upon receiving a complaint from a victim of sexual assault and first degree sexual assault, and so has not been timely or completely investigated. So I think within that construct comes, if it hasn't been timely or completely investigated, that would give Ms. Henry and the folks looking at this the opportunity to say, we believe it's due to shortages. We believe that that we don't have the staff to look into this. But the concern I have less with the amendment is that it seems it could be interpreted broader. I mean, you know, an action to, because this is a big issue we've been dealing with all year long, and the issue of VPSOs and parity between urban and rural and so on. And so I share similar concerns. Representative Guerra?
I could probably, first of all, you know, they're going to try and figure out why these complaints aren't being investigated and why they're not being investigated in a timely manner. They might determine that one of the reasons is personnel shortages. I mean, that's probably going to be the determination in a lot of the cases. But I suppose, so that we're not directing them to do something that that they wouldn't want to do, we could say, and I'll do a conceptual amendment in a moment. We could say, is it the Office of Victims' Rights? Is that?
Yeah.
Yes.
We could say, if the office determines it's pertinent, and then there's a typo on the urban and rural thing that they should change it. It should be rural or urban, but instead of and. But so why don't I, can I offer this as a conceptual amendment, or an amendment to the amendment, Madam Chair, which would be, and it says, right now it says, if pertinent, that should be changed to, if the office determines it is pertinent.
Okay. Is there an objection to the amendment to the amendment? Okay, hearing none, the amendment as amended comes before us. Mrs. Rice, would you care
just,
to comment?
Just briefly, Madam Chair, one other amendment to the amendment, which would be another amendment to the amendment. I move the second amendment to the amendment, which would be, it should say urban or rural, not urban and rural.
Is there any objection to that? Okay, hearing none, then the amendment as amended is back before us. Lauren?
Like I said before, through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think that, I mean, this is out of my purview. It's for the committee to decide, but I'm not exactly sure that it fits with the intent of the bill, or if it's in line with what OVR was originally charged to do, and that's serve as advocates for victims rather than make policy recommendations. Well, they do make policy recommendations, but public safety recommendations and analyze how services are provided throughout the state. But again, I I'm not a legislator, so.
You got it. Can we move on,
Madam Secretary, will you call the roll on amendment number 3?
Representative Wilson is not present. Representative Gruenberg?
Yes.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative McGuire?
No.
Representative Cott?
No.
Representative Coghill?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
2 yes, 4 no.
So amendment number 3 fails. That being said, I think there's enough on the record that to give Ms. Henry the latitude. Certainly in sub B, we wouldn't want her to exclude from her report information regarding personnel and staffing that certainly leads to a lack of a timely or complete investigation. I think that's something that we're looking for. So, okay, I'd appreciate a motion.
Madam Chair.
Pardon me, Representative Cott.
Further amendments?
Sure.
Madam Chairman, on page 2, line 15, regarding the report itself when it is due, we've got a 30-day window there between August 31st and September 30th, and one of the amendments we passed said that that information would have to be provided within 2 weeks. So you could have an incident occur the end of August, and that information then turned over the 15th or 14th of September, and it's going to be pretty, I think, cumbersome in putting together a report that includes accurate data in that 2 week period, number one. Number two, is this report also could contain legislative recommendations, and that's a little more thoughtful process that goes into that. I don't think you can do that even within 30 days if you've got a group discussing this with other members. That'd be very difficult to do. And number three, since it is a serious report, and if I just put this year in perspective, if this analysis was concluded August of this year and the report was due to the legislative body in September, there would be many of us that wouldn't be here that could act on this next year. So I would like to see if it's in agreement with the sponsor that the report is due to the legislature the first day of the 26th legislature. That gives the division an opportunity to put it together in a responsible way. I don't think not force them to put a report together that may be somewhat haphazard or not include all the information I think we're going to be looking for.
So that's amendment number 4.
Madam Chair, just I'm going to object
comments?
For one
okay.
question.
Representative Gruenberg.
If that's conceptual, then they can plug in the exact date. Could they do that?
You could do the exact date. I was just the first day of the 26th legislative session is kind of.
Ms. Henry, do you have any comment on that? And.
Is that going to be 2008?
That's correct.
Okay. Then that's fine with me.
Okay. And Lauren? No objection. Okay.
Is that the right legislature?
Yes.
So we're talking about in January of 2009.
Okay.
January, whatever, 10th or 11th or whatever. Okay. So that's conceptual amendment number 4. Is there an objection to that? Representative Gruenberg, do you remove your objection?
I do.
Okay, is there further objection? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 4 carries. Further amendments? Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I move Senate Bill 206 with individual recommendations as amended to House Finance.
Okay, is there an objection to that motion? Hearing
wrong
none?
Bill. You moved the wrong bill.
You moved the wrong bill.
Oh, I'm reading the wrong.
Whoops. Boy, we're done early.
Senate Bill 134.
Senate Bill 134, as amended, individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes onto finance. Is there an objection to that motion? Okay, hearing none.
Madam Chair,
there is an objection. Okay.
I'm going to say something that is almost not pertinent, but we're going to let the bill out in just a second. So, as you might have told, I'm sitting here a little bit frustrated today. And the way this would work if this were a Democratic bill in the Senate would be that. Some of the leadership would start asking questions that they really don't have, start making comments that really aren't pertinent to the bill.
And
they would use those as an excuse to actually kill the bill. That's what happens on our side. I would just like it on the record that I don't do that here.
And,
Names shall be excluded to protect the guilty?
It's a little frustrating. But
so the topic is happy to be a House member.
Not really happy to be a House member. I guess a little tired of dealing with people that don't do the job in a way that is really acceptable. So, there, I'm done. I'm not holding your bill for bogus reasons, and I know actually your boss doesn't do that either, but
you remove your objection?
I remove my objection.
So the objection's been removed. Any further objection? Okay, hearing none, Senate Bill number 134 moves out of House Judiciary. Okay, that brings our last item up, which is Senate Bill 206. We have Captain Ross Plummer online for questions from the Anchorage Police Department. We have a series of amendments that have been handed out by Representative Guerra. We've already heard testimony on the bill. We did the initial hearing. And so just so that members know that we have the resources of Captain Plummer as well as Annie Carpinetti from the Department of Law and Mrs. Rice from the sponsor's office. And so why don't we go ahead and take up as Representative Guerra, which would you like as amendment number one?
Number one will be to page 2, line 23.
Oh, pardon me. Shalana just pointed out that we need to adopt the CS, which is version R first. Could I have a motion?
Before we adopt it, can somebody explain what the differences are? I've read the last version of the bill, but I have no idea what the changes are.
Okay. Lauren, can you explain the changes?
Chair McGuire, Representative Gruenberg can explain those changes. Our office worked with his.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg.
In no particular order. Oh, let me have the other version. Okay. In no particular order, one change is on page 3, line 14, where it said, a person receiving a subpoena to testify may request the DA to withdraw the subpoena or move the court to quash the subpoena, to withdraw the subpoena. We said, at my request, to move the court to quash the subpoena, because you can always file a motion to quash. Secondly, this version, and we're going to have a further amendment on this to make the language a little cleaner, redid section 1 of the bill to make it clear that it's not just, and I'm looking up at the top of page 2, it's not just a criminal case that is a felony, as in the earlier version of the bill. What it was as it came to us with a court, and I'm looking at page 1, line 11 and 12, with a court proceeding relating to a felony crime, what we've said now at page 2, lines 4, and 5, that it's with any civil or criminal proceeding or an appearance before the grand jury. It did say the grand jury. So we've expanded it from felonies only to if they refuse to honor a subpoena or be sworn or answer as a witness, it's with any civil or criminal case.
Okay.
And then, let me see, just a moment here. We had a packet of, oh, here it is. The other thing is on page 3, a couple of different changes to comport with what
this reminds me. I don't know why. Whenever I worked at Birch Horton, we had a program that would allow you, when you go between drafts of motions, you could do these lines so that you could see the differences between the two. It's just something I'm throwing out there. We should do that. We should implement some kind of a program like that when we go between committee substitutes do a different color and so on. But that way it would be easier for members. We do it as between the original codified law and the law there. So that's clear. But then as between the committee substitutes that change,
It would just be so much easier, wouldn't it? Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there.
That's one of the things we should do.
Sure, I think I can save some time.
Do you want me to finish what I was going to?
I think, actually, if the sponsor and Representative Grunberg are okay with the changes in the CS, I'm fine with them.
Just for the record, this is really important that we put these on the record, what we did. There's only one other thing, and this was at the request of Chief Monaghan. It's on page 3, I believe.
Isn't the bill for the record? I mean,
okay. So I'm sorry. On page 3, lines 20, and then there's another place too.
John, you're going to El Sombrero.
The phrase,
give me a taco.
Unless it's determined that the person is suspected of committing the crime under investigation. And that appears some other place too. Those are the only things.
Susan, you don't type in laughter, do you, when you're transcribing? Okay, good. Thank you. Audible laughter. Okay.
That's both line 20 and 22.
So the objection is removed from adopting committee substitute R. Is that correct, Representative Guerra?
I don't remember, Madam Chair.
You objected to adopting the committee substitute. /R.
The objection is removed.
Okay, is there a further objection to adopting the new committee substitute? Okay, hearing none, we have R before us. That might change slightly your amendment, so you look at them and we can do them conceptually.
Madam Chair, you would move to page 2, line 23. I'll object for discussion purposes.
Okay.
Amendment number 1.
Amendment number 1. Representative Guerra.
We have an amendment.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Do you have copies? These are the ones that I discussed with your office last week.
Great attention.
Do you want another copy? Is that?
To obtain.
I don't think I need this either.
Which one? Oh, page 2, line 23.
Okay, so you might have to. Does that belong there now?
The one where I've written in line 23.
Yeah, no, I've got it. I've got it.
He's changed it.
I've changed it to reflect the CS.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. There you go.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number 1, which is the one that says at page 2, line 23.
Objected for discussion purposes.
Okay.
Let me just say this because it's going to affect all three amendments. My big concern is trying to figure out a balance where law enforcement can get the information it needs from witnesses, but to also protect the other side of the coin, which is we normally don't detain innocent people, and I do have a concern about that. You know, I've got a concern about both law enforcement's ability to obtain the information they need, but the protection of people who haven't committed a crime. So amendment number 1 just says that if you're going to detain somebody, it can't be for any longer than is necessary to do the things that we're detaining them for. I hope that's simple.
Okay. Comments from the bill sponsors?
The Chair, Representative Guerra, the sponsor supports your amendment.
Okay, is there any, does Representative, the sponsor supports the amendment. Do you remove your objection or would you like to maintain it? Anybody else like to object? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 1 carries. That brings us to amendment number 2 by Representative Guerra. Is that page 2, line 14?
Amendment number 1, though, is to allow the sale of 48 ounces of...
Yes, it was.
That's great.
I didn't even hear it. Better I didn't.
Don't worry about it.
And bar stools. And entertainment.
Maybe allowed 2 hours of sleep, so tempers are high for me.
Over here, too. Madam Chair, I move amendment number 2, which...
What's your excuse?
But I still...
You don't have a baby.
My excuse is... Senate leadership, I guess.
Look at Madam Secretary. She's like, I can't follow this, and I want candy.
No, she's good to us. She leaves most of it out. Representative Guerra.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number 2, which is the one that says at page 2, line 14.
Just for you to discuss.
Okay, this is the one we discussed, yeah.
Yeah, this is the one where... I think before you detain a person who you have no suspicion committed a crime, an innocent person, and you're detaining them because they're a witness, not because you have a suspicion that they committed a crime. Let me add more clauses to that sentence so I can make it longer. if law enforcement has a suspicion that somebody committed a crime, there are already standards as to when you can detain them, how,
This bill addresses when you can detain witnesses. And I think you should have a higher burden before you detain somebody who is innocent. And so I think you shouldn't detain them unless you have probable cause that they have information, as opposed to reasonable suspicion that they have information. Again, it's trying to draw this balance between when you detain and how you detain innocent citizens and how you get information that you need to solve crimes. So that's the balance that I would try to draw.
Okay. Sponsors, Representative...
Through the Chair, Representative Guerra, Senator Bundy feels as though this takes away from the intent of the bill and weakens it. The instances that the bill is trying to address are often violent, emotional, fluid circumstances, and we feel as though probable cause is too hard to prove. Ms. Carpinetti, probable cause for detaining someone is too hard to prove. Ms. Carpinetti can speak more to that if that's possible.
Yeah, we have a real concern with this amendment. The standards for an investigative stop by a police officer now, when they are just making a stop to investigate, is reasonable suspicion. And this would be higher than that at a time when really you have a police officer who's trying to investigate what has happened. You want to be able to have him or her make a stop if there's a reasonable suspicion that this person has information. I would really be concerned with changing it to probable cause. It would be confusing to police officers.
I'll maintain my objection, Madam Chair, for the vote, with all due respect to the maker of the amendment.
A little bit. Thanks.
And I'm glad you said that, because he's in a bad mood today. Representative Gere?
This amendment isn't raising the standard. Right now, you're not allowed to stop somebody who hasn't committed a crime to hold them, to ask them questions. So the lower standard applies to a potential criminal. So if you have reasonable suspicion to stop somebody who you believe committed a crime, that's the lower standard. But by going to probable cause for an innocent person, it's not like we're raising the standard for this. It is a higher standard, but right now you can't do this at all. So we're actually lowering the standard for an innocent person.
For investigation, police ought to be able to stop a person and say, you know, just tell me what you know. Based on a reasonable suspicion that this person might know somebody. To require them to have probable cause, I think, is under the circumstances of these investigations, it's just too high, and it will defeat the purpose of the bill. And for that reason, we would object to it.
Okay, and we've debated it. Is there any further? Okay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll on amendment number 2.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Wilson is not present. Representative Coghill?
No.
Representative Goomber?
No.
Representative Cott?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative McGuire?
He had to think about that. No.
One yes. Five no.
He's tired enough. He's arguing with his own amendment.
So amendment number 2 fails to carry. Amendment number 3 by Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you would look, I move amendment number 3, which is the one that says page 2, line 21.
Is there an objection?
I'll object here.
Okay.
I'm just going to let it go.
Representative Guerra. So this is page 2, line 21.
I think the least change of wording of any amendment I've ever filed if I pass it.
But it's pretty substantial.
From may have to has. Madam Chair, if you would look at, everybody would look at page 2, line 21. Right now, if we don't amend this bill, all you need to do to stop an innocent person is have reasonable suspicion, the lower standard which we've adopted. Not that the person has information that might be relevant, but that the person may have information. That's like almost no standard. Reasonable suspicion that the person might possibly have information. That's everybody. So all this does is say if it's reasonable suspicion of something, it's got to be reasonable suspicion that the person has information. So that we can't, in a particular neighborhood, just stop all people of a particular race, all people of a particular income group, all people of a particular look. It's got to be reasonable suspicion that the person has information.
That seems fair.
But, Madam Chair...
Annie, tell me why it's not.
Actually, as long as we have reasonable suspicion, has is okay with us.
Yeah. Is there an objection maintained? No further objection. Amendment number 3 carries. Further amendments to Senate Bill number 206?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Groomer.
You should have another one. It's R1.
I do have it now.
And okay. This?
This will be amendment number 4.
Wait a minute.
It's a pretty low standard. And
This has been adopted into this.
But then I move the bill.
Wait a minute. Just a minute.
These are brand new today. The record, Representative Gruenberg.
Yeah. Okay. I want to divide the. I'm going to make this amendment 4A.
Okay.
And then there's going to be 4B. 4A goes down to line 16. That's A. And then below that is B. And I am going to move 4A, and we'll discuss separately.
Let me just ask, does the sponsor have any objection to either of these?
Wait a minute. I'm not moving 4B. I'm not sure.
But Max, what I'm trying to do here, honey, is speed things up. There's no need to divide the question. If the sponsor doesn't have an objection, and if members don't have an objection, then there's no... You may have an objection to your own amendment?
This is the first time I've seen this.
But it's your
amendment. Madam Chair, I...
Where's your son? Bring him in here.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
4A... We can be out of here fast, guys. 4A... As I understand it, is simply, it's grammatical, it makes it read better. Okay, so I'm asking unanimous consent for 4A.
Okay, no objection.
Okay, so without objection, 4A, Madam Chair?
There's no objection.
And so now you're going to go to 4B, which you're going to move, but you've never seen.
Okay, I would like Ms. Carpinetti to explain 4B. Because this was as a result of something I put into the
You put into this, now you want to take it out.
I don't think I do. But, I mean, I don't know. She's not saying that exactly. It'll be okay, but I want her to put on the record what she's doing, please. 4B.
Okay, 4B. I would like to...
And he runs out of the building. We never see her again.
No, okay. I can make this quick. If you look at the CS on page 3, line 14, we were concerned with that language or moved the court to quash the subpoena because in its context, it implied that a person would have a right to get the subpoena quashed as long as he or she gave his or her state identification. Uh-huh. So we asked that that be removed and that a sentence be put in because Representative Gruenberg had a concern that there be a statement that, you know, there are remedies in law now if you get a subpoena to move to quash them, to add the sentence that's on the bottom of the amendment at the end of that section to say the person may use other rights provided by law to respond to the subpoena, just so it is clear that they have the rights in law that are there now.
Madam Chair, it was my intent to allow a person who then provided the valid government-issued photographic identification, even if the DA wouldn't withdraw the subpoena, to file a motion to quash and let the court do it, even over the DA's objection, if the court felt that was appropriate. That was exactly my intention.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's fine. I think a person always has a right to move to quash a subpoena, but the way it was put in this particular section implied that it was kind of an automatic thing. So that's why we wanted to move that out and just so that the person knows that he or she has a right to make a motion to quash a subpoena, they can always do that.
Madam Chair, I think the current language says exactly that. It doesn't give them the right to have it quashed. It says it may move the court to quash. And that simply means that they have that option to file a motion. It's up to the court to quash, and that was exactly my intent, and it says exactly what I intended, and I do not support 4B because it's totally up to the court whether to grant the motion.
Okay.
So amendment 4B.
Don't offer 4B.
I'm not. Okay. I am not offering 4B.
Then any other amendments?
That's it.
Okay, then I would move Senate Bill 206 as amended with individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there an objection to moving Senate Bill 206 as amended? Individual recommendations
and attached.
He's left the building. Okay, any objection? Hearing none. The bill is moved and we are adjourned.
Oh. Yeah,